brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Roshan Russell, head boys basketball coach at St. Rita High School in Chicago, Illinois, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are about, what would you say, Jay, 1 hour away from a new all-time NBA scoring champ?
I think so. I mean, so we're recording this right now and there's 6.5 minutes left in the second quarter and he's already got 20 tonight. He needed 36. He's at, he's 16 away and he's efficient tonight. He's 6 of 10, 6 of 8 from the field free throw line, but he's being efficient. He's got a few assists. I think it's going to happen tonight, Mike. I think the tea leaves were saying that it was going to happen with all the confluence of events. He showed up in all black. He's got like 200 people in attendance from like childhood. All his high school teammates are there. The kid who ran on the court said, "Come home, LeBron." You know that guy? You know, remember okay. that? Like okay. before he came back to Cleveland, the kid who ran on the floor with the shirt.
I got nothing.
Said, "Come home, LeBron." You don't know that guy? James Blair?
Got nothing.
You don't remember that happening the season before he came back?
No.
Oh, he ran on the floor when the Cavs played the Heat at home with a shirt that said, "Come home, LeBron," or "We miss you, LeBron," or something like that. He's out of the game tonight. He spent a lot of money to go out there tonight. He's going tonight and the Milwaukee game. So anyways, I think it's going to happen tonight, Mike, for sure.
Is Kareem there?
Kareem is there. Kareem is there as well.
That's good. That's the guy who should be there.
Yeah. So as we record this podcast, we will I will keep you apprised of the situation. Soon it'll be halftime and no more scoring will take place. But LeBron's just sat on the bench too, so we might not have an update for a while. But when it's halftime and when we're recording, I will keep all the listeners up to date of our current situation while discussing this, even though by now you're going to know whether or not he's broken the record when you're listening to this. But anyways, there's other things in the NBA to talk about really quickly, Mike. I mean, I guess really quickly is we'll be talking about this one subject a lot. But before we talk about that one subject, I figured it was only appropriate that I choose this team to be your win shares tonight, Mike. The Dallas Mavericks. So what are the top five teams or five players in win shares for the Dallas Mavericks? Number one is a gimme.
Okay, number one. I believe he has a statue outside the arena. I'm going to go with Dirk.
A good statue, too. It's a good one.
It's a very good statue. I'm going to go with
Dirk. Dirk. Good.
Okay, number two. Now we start having to look at guys who played for a decent length of time for the Dallas Mavericks. I'm going to go with This is tough because I don't know that there's a lot of longtime Mavericks. And I'm guessing that even when I think about the best Dirk teams, you didn't have guys who were there on the Mavericks for a ton of time at the same time that Dirk was there. I kind of feel like he had a rotating cast of characters, which again, isn't that surprising since he was there for 20 plus years. I'm going to go outside the Dirk era and go Rolando Blackman.
He's number two.
All right.
Mike, that was the guy I was thinking. There's no way.
Do you know why Rolando Blackman? Do you know his most famous moment in the NBA?
No, I don't.
In the All-Star game, I forget what year it was. I want to say it was in the early 80s. He had to make two free throws in probably what was one of the best and most competitive All-Star games in history. He had to make two free throws with either a second to go or after the clock had expired to send that game into overtime. And he stepped
up to the line. An All-Star game. It was the 1987 All-Star game.
Okay, there you go. There you go. So
crack research staff on it.
All right, so Rolando Blackman, number two. Man, now it gets tough because I can think of guys that were – I just don't know how long any of these guys played with the team. I'm going to say Derek Harper.
Derek Harper is three.
All right. So heading into the pod, you told me that this was going to be an impossible task. So far, this is the best I've ever done. I have the top three so far. Now, I'm going to keep going and think about number four for the Dallas Mavericks. I may need to ask a question at this point. Is there someone that, and again, I don't know if you know for sure or not, whether or not this guy played during the prime years of Dirk. I'm going to say Michael Finley.
Number five.
All right. So I need one more and I can
this,
have a perfect
this other slot. Guy, this guy definitely played with Dirk. Definitely played with Dirk.
All right. So, man, definitely played with Dirk. So I'm going to throw out my candidates that I'm
okay.
that I'm thinking about. One of the guys I'm thinking about, and again, these are guys that I don't think played long enough with Nowitzki to warrant this, but I'm thinking – Jason Kidd is popping into my head. Don't say whether these are right or wrong.
I'm not going to say. I'm
Steve
not gonna say.
Nash is coming into my head.
Okay.
And then I think the guy I'm going to go with, and I'm not very confident in this answer, but I believe he played a pretty solid 6 or 7 years with the Mavericks during a time when they were winning. I'm going to go with Josh Howard.
Well, all three of those guys are in the top 12, Mike.
But none of them are number four?
Well, I'm just answering Josh Howard before you make another guess. Josh Howard was number 12.
Number 12. Okay. Well, I'll go. I don't think Nash was there long enough to be able to do that. Kidd had two stints with the Mavericks. I'm going to go with Jason Kidd.
He was number 11.
Okay. Well, the only other name I've got is Nash, so I'll throw Nash.
He was eight.
He was eight. Eight. So I need a four.
There's a guy who also shared a name as one of the ones you just said.
He shared a name.
First name.
Jason Terry.
That's number four. There you go.
Really?
Really? Jason
Terry. How many years did the Jet play for the Mavericks?
Hold on, I'll look that up. I'll look that up. Hold on.
Because I don't
I closed up. Basketball Reference kind of stinks, Mike, because it has a video highlight of all the teams and all the like players. So like if I'm on a web page, it slows me down.
Yes,
he played from Dallas from 2004 to 2012.
Okay, so 8 years. I guess I think of him more as being a shorter term piece with the Mavericks during their title run.
And all those games, Mike, all those years. 80 games, 81, 82, 74, 77, 82.
And they're obviously winning a lot during that era too. So,
yeah.
All right. So I didn't do too bad. That was pretty good.
I'm pretty impressed. So let me just ran out the list here. Okay. Number six is Brad Davis.
Brad Davis.
Number seven, Mark. I don't even know how to say this guy's last name. Mark Aguirre. Aguirre.
You
know,
Mark Aguirre? Dude, you got to read some NBA history. The Bad Boys, man. Aguirre was with the Bad Boys.
I'll have to get this one. Number 10 is Dwight Powell, believe it or not.
Dwight Powell.
Dwight Powell. Let's see if I can pull up my
Luka's not there yet.
Luka's close. He's close to the top 12 for sure. He's close to the top 12.
It's kind of stunning that he's not there yet.
Sam Perkins.
All right.
He's nine.
Carolina guy.
So for win shares, Josh Howard is at like 37, and Luka has over the last 4 years is like at 35. So, and that's including this year. So he's going to be there soon. Like he's going to be in the top 12 soon.
Josh Howard will soon be off the list.
Yeah. The Lakers, it's taken a turn, Mike. It's taken a turn. LeBron hasn't scored. He's been on the bench. It was 57-62 when LeBron went on the bench. I don't know if you're watching this. Are you watching this?
I'm not watching it. I have a game cast.
Oh, so you know the score. So they've gone on a 10-0 run, although Westbrook just hit a three. Listen, Russell Westbrook is on a quest to not have this happen tonight, I think. He threw LeBron had two fast break layups he could have had, but Russell Westbrook turned the ball over. Westbrook took the over on the number of games it was going to take.
Russ wants his signature moment to be a non-pass to LeBron so he can't break the record in this game. That's going to be Russ's career signature.
Well, you know Russell Westbrook is now ninth all-time or top 10 all-time in assists, and he's going to be ninth all-time.
It's not surprising.
He's going to cross 9,000 assists probably in this game tonight.
And it's funny because I don't think about Russell Westbrook in any way, shape, or form as being a great or intuitive passer. Like even when you think about Westbrook at his best, I don't think about all the.
He averaged a triple double, Mike. A triple double.
That's what I'm saying, which is incredible when you consider the fact again that I don't think of him when I think of his highlights, when I think of the best moments of his career, when I think about what he does, I don't think about him as that kind of a passer. You think about him as a downhill attacking the rim, explosive guy that people can't stay in front of. That's the guy that you think of.
And yeah.
You're talking about somebody who's going to finish in the top 10 in assists in the league in history. That's pretty incredible for a guy that you don't really even consider to be a great passer.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if you read, there was an article today that Zach Lowe wrote about LeBron and how he kind of always resisted the idea of being labeled a scorer, especially earlier in his career. And then now it's kind of like he's going to break the all-time scoring record, but yet people still, when they start listing off the greatest scorers in the history of the league, LeBron is not really very high on that list. I mean, obviously he's high on the list of all-time scoring, but when you say who are the greatest scorers in the history of the game, that LeBron's name rarely comes up. And Zach talked a little bit about how when you think about LeBron, like he doesn't really have that signature move that you completely associate with him. And then obviously you have his most historic, iconic play, the one that pops into everybody's mind when you think about what are the defining moments and iconic shots of LeBron. It's the block. And there isn't really one offensive moment that crystallizes for you when you think about LeBron. Whereas if you think,
wait a second. I got to take you to task.
Okay, come on.
2007 Detroit. Give me a break.
Right, but not an icon, not a shot, not a, there's no singular moment from that. Like,
2009 Orlando Magic, even though we ended up losing the series.
Right, but I'm saying even that, I guess what my point is that when you think of Kareem, look, I don't know that one singular shot stands out for Kareem, but
It's the
Skyhook. Yeah. But I'm saying one particular moment in one particular game, I don't know if there's one that stands out for Kareem. And then Jordan, obviously, you can think of a billion different things that could sort of represent Jordan in terms of that. And so it's just the article was interesting, just talking about the fact that because LeBron's shot portfolio is so diverse, he does so many different things well, and that he's continuously added to his game over the years, that nothing really is sort of his signature. And Zach said the one thing might be like on the fast break, sort of his spin move and then rumble to the lane and score, which when he says that, or when I describe that to you, I'm sure you can kind of picture what that move looks like for LeBron. But it's just interesting that the guy's going to score 38,000 whatever points, and over the next couple of years, he's going to put that record so far out there that it's hard to believe anybody's going to get it. I mean, obviously, at some point.
Well, they said tonight up before the broadcast that once LeBron gets there, okay, someone would have to average 25 points a night for 19 years straight playing all 82 games, which is never going to happen in our NBA to get there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, too, is when you look at his longevity, but also just the fact that you have to be so durable in order to be able to play, and then the load management and the way things are going, that the number of guys that are going to play 80 or 82 games anymore is those people just don't exist very well. They're very few and far between. And so that's going to make it more and more difficult. We talked about it last week when we discussed those other records with rebounding and assists and block shots, that because of the way that the game is structured today and with guys resting, and it's impossible when you start looking at what the last 20 years has brought in terms of the amount of minutes guys play and the amount of games that they play. And then you look at the longevity, and just, it's almost impossible to imagine that some of those records are going to be broken. And clearly the points one, it seems unfathomable. Yet at the same time, scoring's obviously, I don't want to say it's easier this season, it seems like, than it's ever been. And clearly the three-pointer in the last 10 years has accelerated guys' ability to score points. You look at if Jordan had played in the three-point era, clearly in his day, he wasn't a great three-point shooter, but with the emphasis on the shot the way it was today, we all can probably pretty easily surmise that Jordan would become one of the best three-point shooters in the league if that was something that was necessary in order for him to do what he did. So it's just, again, I think the bottom line is it's another testament to how great LeBron is and how great he's been over the course of his career. And then I think it's worth saying again, I know we've said it a million times, and look, I'll always stump for the fact that Jordan is the greatest of all time and nobody will ever be able to convince me otherwise. And yet at the same time, you look at what LeBron has accomplished in his life and you think back to him as a 14, 15 year old kid who
driving a Hummer at the game.
Yeah. But I mean, even at that time, like, people already were anointing him as he's going to be the next greatest thing. And you look across the sports landscape or any landscape at all in any walk of life, and you look at somebody who's identified at age 15 as this person is going to be the greatest at whatever it is that they do. And that comes to fruition never. And the fact that LeBron has not only been a tremendous success, but has in many people's eyes actually reached the pinnacle of being the greatest player of all time is just, it's unbelievable. And the fact that he's done that just continues to astound me. And the more you think about it and the more you try to wrap your brain around it, the more it just becomes completely nonsensical that he's been able to do what he's been able to do. It's just, it's incredible. So kudos to LeBron tonight if he gets it done, or if it doesn't happen tonight, if it happens in the next game. It's an incredible accomplishment. It's a testament to his will and determination and the hard work that he put in. And just, I have nothing but respect for what LeBron has done in his career. It's incredible. Despite the temper tantrum last week that we talked about, that needs to go away.
All right. Let's talk about one of LeBron's former teammates, Kyrie Irving, Mike. traded. It happened. He requested a trade, and then it like immediately happened. To the Mavericks.
You want to share your opinion first? You want me to share mine? Why don't you share yours first?
Oh man, listen, he's a clown. No one can deny that he's skilled at basketball, but I'm concerned, Mike. You know why I'm concerned?
I know you love Luka.
I love Luka. I just hope that the Kyrie funk doesn't spread to Luka. Although I know Luka likes to enjoy a nice adult beverage, so maybe he'll drink some adult beverages and Kyrie can do some ayahuasca and meditate and they'll be like in heaven together. I don't know. I'm concerned, Mike. I'm concerned for Luka. I hope his mental health is okay. That's all I'm going to say because it's going to be maddening. It's going to be maddening. At the same time, if everything works cohesively, I mean, the two of them on the same team, but I mean, it didn't work for Kim and Durant. So is it going to really work for him and Luka? I don't know. I mean, is Kyrie clearly an upgrade from Spencer Dinwiddie? Yes. But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, he hasn't signed any kind of contract, right?
No, he's not. So he's a free agent at the end of the season as of right now.
So you gave up a 2027 and a 2029 draft pick. I believe it was a 27-29 or something.
I think the first round pick, one of the picks was a 2027. One of the picks was a first rounder. I can't remember if that was a 27 or 29. And then the other pick was a second rounder. And it's the flip flop of whatever the first round pick was.
But so you can give up all these draft picks, but you don't even know that Kyrie is going to be on your team, let alone playing basketball in the next season. I don't know. I don't feel good. I don't feel good about it for Dallas. I mean, Brooklyn, God, I know that Kessler Edwards is apparently getting traded. I thought there was a chance that Durant's going to get traded now. I mean, if I'm Brooklyn, I blow it up. Like, I know the trade deadline's Thursday. Just blow it up. Send Simmons somewhere. Send Durant somewhere. Get some picks. I mean, I don't know who takes Simmons. I mean,
you're going to have to pay somebody to take Simmons. There's going to be a Simmons tax. Simmons is not an asset. Nobody wants that guy. Nobody wants that contract. After this season, I think he's still owed $80-plus million in the next 2 years after this one.
Let's just make this speculation. What amount of money is Simmons worth? Like, what would you be willing if you were giving him a contract today? How much money would you be willing to give him?
Veterans minimum.
Veterans minimum, huh?
I mean, the guy doesn't play. And when he does, you're never going to be able to play him in any meaningful minutes in a real game because teams are just going to foul him and he's afraid to go anywhere near the basket with the ball. So if you're the Nets, Ben Simmons at this point is not an asset. I mean, he's somebody that you're going to have to attach things to Ben Simmons in order to get that contract off your books. I mean, I think they're really stuck with him. Now, look, they got a guy that just put up 40 points three games in a row.
He's a shooter, baby.
Hey, you want to replace Kyrie's production? Cam Thomas is like, I'm your guy. I've done it. It's a done deal.
Apparently, he's done it the last three games.
I don't think they blow it up unless KD asks them to, right? I mean, unless Durant says, hey, I want out. Because just like Dallas, the flip side of what you just said a minute ago, right, where clearly Kyrie is a more talented player than Spencer Dinwiddie and Dorian Finney-Smith, clearly. On the other hand, when you start thinking about the Nets, you have these guys that you brought in. And so now you have Finney-Smith and you have Dinwiddie, you have Durant, you have Cam Thomas. Maybe they have another deal to make. You got rid of the baggage, the impending doom that is surrounding Kyrie at all times, the just waiting inevitably for that other shoe to drop and for him to just completely fall off a cliff. So you've eliminated that now from your roster. If you come back with a healthy Durant and you can throw out there Dinwiddie, Finney Smith, Durant, Nick Claxton.
Joe.
I mean, you got a lot of options. Cam Thomas, I mean, guys put up 40. Say what you want. He's put up 40 in three games in a row. Pretty incredible. Now, they're not winning, but clearly if you're putting up 40 in a game, there's something there that maybe could be part of an actual functional team. It all comes down to Durant. Like, is Durant happy? Is he okay? Is he fine? Does he want to stay? Is he looking around going, this is terrible? Is he looking around going, hey, now we've eliminated this potential anvil that's been hanging around our neck for however long? I mean, basically the whole time Kyrie's been there, we've eliminated that uncertainty. Now maybe we can go forward. Now, is that a championship team? I don't think so, but that's a team that is at least decent and could be good and could probably win a round or two in the playoffs if Durant is at his best. So I don't know what they do. From the Nets perspective, considering the fact that Kyrie was demanding a trade, and clearly him demanding a trade is different from other guys demanding a trade, because Kyrie would easily have and happily sat down for the rest of the season, or easily and happily sabotaged games while he was playing, or said he was only going to play the third quarter of road games, or made some other goofy statement, whatever. So if you're Brooklyn, you have to be fairly happy with what you got out of there. So Dallas, on the other hand, I don't even know how to analyze this, because I think what you have to do in your head, and I'll ask you these questions because this is kind of the way I've tried to look at it and think about it. And every time I really try to think about it, my brain pulls so far in two directions that I feel like it's going to snap. So the best case scenario is we've seen it, right? We've seen it here in Cleveland where Kyrie is the second banana to an all-time great player, and the two of them work magic together, screen roll. Kyrie is clearly one of the best clutch shooters, shot makers. I mean, we've seen it. And the ceiling for that group, at least on offense, is pretty high. And with the way the Western Conference is this year, if you had Luka and Kyrie playing at their absolute best, I mean, it's not inconceivable that they could get to the Western Conference Finals, and it's not inconceivable that they could even win it. Now, defensively, it's going to be a little bit more of a struggle, and they're going to have to do some patchwork to make their defense halfway decent. But there's no question that the offensive ceiling for this group is crazy high. And yet, on the other hand, I said it back when Durant and Kyrie first got together, and then when you added Harden to the mix, that confluence of personalities and egos to me was never, ever going to work. And I guess it worked for the 16 games that those guys were on the floor together. But I look at this the same way. I just don't see Kyrie's track record since 2016 has been a guy who can't keep it together for a month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever. Now, maybe because he needs a contract, depending on what Dallas ends up doing with him, are they going to extend him where he can only get a 2-year, like $78 million extension? Do they wait so they can sign him? Kyrie obviously wants the 4-year full max. No team, I can't imagine, really wants to give him that. I don't see how the ideal, how the best case scenario ever comes to pass in this thing. And I guess if you're Dallas, you look at it and say, if you can get it to work for 4 months, that maybe you give yourself a chance again to get back to the Western Conference Finals, and then who knows? And worst case scenario, Kyrie walks at the end of the year and his money comes off the books, and now Dallas has money to spend in free agency. Now, whether they can attract somebody who wants to come and play with Luka, who knows? But they've at least given themselves a path to either re-sign Kyrie if things go well, or if he walks or they decline to re-sign him, then they open up a salary slot for a near max player. So whether they can attract somebody to Dallas, they haven't been able to do that with very much success in terms of free agency in the recent past, but who knows?
Yep. So prediction time. Do you like what do you see happening? Which you're more in line with the bad than the good, right? You're thinking what's more like? Is it 50-50 here, Mike? That Dallas does better, or do you think they're about the same?
My brain explodes every time I try to answer this question because in my head, I can see it. I can see how it can work. I mean, I really can. I can see how Kyrie playing off Luka and them screening for each other and the ability of each one of them to create stuff on their own in difficult situations, which every team needs a guy who can get you a bucket. And now you have two guys who are pretty much among the very, very, very best in the league at creating baskets for themselves in clutch moments. So that part of you says, man, how does this not work? I mean, yeah, they're not going to be able to guard anybody, but nobody's going to be able to guard them either. And yet I keep looking back at my Brooklyn experience and saying, there's no possible way that Kyrie comes to Dallas and suddenly is this model citizen, both on and off the floor in terms of what he wants to do. And again, Luka's been playing a certain way. How much does he want to play differently? How much does he want to defer? What kind of relationship is there pre-existing between Luka and Kyrie? I have no idea. I would say, I think what happens is that Dallas gets marginally better in the regular season. And then in the playoffs, depending on their matchup, maybe they outscore a team in the first round, but I can't see them. I don't see them making the Western Conference Finals. I just don't think they have enough defensively, and I don't trust Kyrie either to be healthy or to avoid controversy. I just don't see it.
Okay, fair enough. I think they make it to the Western Conference Finals, and then something epically fails them. That's what I'm going to predict, Mike.
All right.
Epic failure in the Western Conference Finals.
All right.
That's my current. I reserve the right to change my opinion when we make predictions in the playoffs. But that's as of this moment, that's what I foresee.
Right reserve. You got it.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
All right. So I guess the other thing I want to definitely talk about is I want to talk about the Cavs. Normally that's how we lead off the pod. But we didn't talk about the Cavs at all yet. Are you okay talking Cavs for a few minutes?
Sure, let's do it.
They look like a better basketball team. This is like the team that we saw at the beginning of the year, right? Like, this is better. And Love's out of the rotation. That's good, I think. I don't think there's any way they can trade him, though, right? I don't want to trade him just because he's been a part of the team. I don't think you're going to get anything for him, right? Like, what could you get for him? Can you get anything for him that's going to be meaningful?
I don't know. I mean, I think what you would be doing if you were to get rid of him, you're clearly having to match contracts, which what's he making? $30 million a year. So theoretically, I mean, you could bring back some useful players. The question is, again, do the Cavs want to bring back $30 million in players? The guys that you're going to get at that level of salary for a player of Kevin Love's quality are going to be guys and contracts that you don't want. So I don't know.
Is having someone like him, a glue guy in the locker room, worth, I mean, just keeping him and because you're not going to get anything anyways?
It would have to be something that really markedly improved your chances of trying to advance in the playoffs in order for that to happen. I just don't see how what Kevin Love does, how that's more valuable to any other team than it might theoretically be to the Cavs. I still think the good version of Kevin Love that we saw earlier in the season, where he's making threes and rebounding, which are his two best skills at this point in his career, that guy still is valuable because he gives you some flexibility with Mobley and Allen, and you can mix and match. And but clearly that thumb injury, I think, threw off his shot. And if he's not making threes, then his value out on the floor is pretty dubious, which is why he's kind of fallen out of the rotation. I don't think there's really a trade out there for the Cavs that makes sense where you get rid of a guy who's been that important to the franchise for, it would probably have to be like two or three marginal guys, right, to fill the salary spot. And the Cavs don't have room on their roster. And I don't know what you're getting in terms of playoff rotation guys for Kevin Love. And to me, that doesn't, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see how there's any move for the Cavs to make with him, to be honest with you. I just don't see anything that's worth it.
LeVert's the guy, right?
LeVert's the guy if they trade. But he, I don't know. I don't know. What are you going to get for him either? Like,
well, I think what you'd get is you'd get another player that's flawed, just like LeVert is flawed, but they'd be flawed in different ways. I think you look at the same reason why the Cavs got LeVert last year is he's theoretically a secondary playmaker. Like, he's a guy who can get his own shot. He's a guy who can create for others. And I think what we're finding out as Cavs fans, and I think what people at his other stops have found, is that there's things about him that are tantalizing. And you think back to that Celtics game that he had earlier in the year, when he's shooting it well and when he's taking care of the basketball, he can be a really effective player. But on the other hand, it feels like there's a lot of nights where he just misses so many shots that you feel like he should make. And he's just prone to poor decisions and turnovers. And because of that, he doesn't feel like a guy that in a playoff game, I'm not sure I'd trust LeVert to be on the floor in the last 5 minutes and make good decisions. I think that's really what the Cavs are looking for is, who is the fifth guy that they could have on the floor in crunch time?
Okoro.
Look, if Okoro can continue to shoot the ball the way he has and play the way he has offensively for the last 2 or 3 weeks, then he could be that guy. And obviously, as a former fifth pick in the draft, the Cavs and all their fans would be ecstatic if Isaac Okoro, if what we've seen over the last 3 weeks isn't just a blip, but it's, you know, that it's real, it's not a mirage, then the Cavs really do have something. They found something. But I'm not sure that that's sustainable, because it hasn't proven sustainable over the course of his career. I'd love it if it was Okoro. I think he's the guy defensively who brings something to the table that you're going to need in the playoffs. He can really defend lots of guys, but offensively he has to be able to make open shots, and he has to shoot open shots confidently, and he has to attack the basket, and he has to do all the things that the very best 3-and-D guys in the league do. And when he does that, or when somebody does that, then this team's really hard to beat. If they get production out of that spot, they're pretty darn good. And when they don't, it's a struggle, because that spot is open all the time because of the way the rest of the offense is constructed.
That's fair enough, Mike. I want it to be Okoro. I just don't see, I don't know. Who's out there?
I mean, who could, okay. Do you want Jay Crowder?
11 points away. No. I've already had that experiment.
Yeah, neither do I. I have no interest in bringing Jay Crowder here. I know that on the Simmons pod, they talked a little bit about Harrison Barnes. Does Harrison Barnes excite you?
I mean, 2015, 16 Harrison Barnes, maybe.
Harrison Barnes is a good player. I think Harrison Barnes would fit nicely in that spot. If I could give up LeVert and something else on my bench.
Dylan Windler
and a couple of second round picks and get Harrison Barnes. Sure, I'd be about Harrison.
Is he in the expiring or is he more long?
Nah, he's still under contract. I think he's got at least another year or two on his contract.
8 points away.
There you go. It's going to happen. So I thought Harrison Barnes is interesting. Bogdanovich, obviously from Detroit, everybody wants him. I don't think the Cavs have enough to be able to get him from Detroit, both in terms of we obviously can't offer anything significant in the draft, and I don't think any of the young guys that we have are going to be enough to pry him out of Detroit. I did hear, can't remember where I saw or read this, somebody talked about the Bogdanovich from Atlanta because he's kind of been out of the rotation and not playing, that he might be a steadier version of LeVert, where if he's healthy, can handle the ball, he can shoot it, can be a distributor, can play make for other guys. He's mildly intriguing to me. Look, I'd be okay if they traded LeVert with whatever they got back, just because, like I said, I'm not sure I trust LeVert in the last 5 minutes of a playoff game. And these other four guys are just really good. And you're a consistent performer at that fifth spot from being a real team that has a chance to go pretty far in the playoffs. I think farther than a lot of people think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I just don't know. Like I said, I don't know that we have enough to get anyone that's going to make. I think Harrison Barnes is probably our ceiling in what we can get.
If you could get Barnes and keep Okoro, then I'd be okay with whatever else they have to do around the back end of the roster. Or again, if we're trading multiple second round picks to make that happen, I'm completely fine with that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, Mike, I'm thinking that
we got to talk. We got to talk Mobley quick, though, man.
Well, he's good. He's okay. Good at this thing called basketball.
That's good. That's good analysis. I just think
he's coming along. I still think the one thing he needs to work on is his handle. We agree with that, right?
But it's better, man. It's so much better. It's so much better. I mean, you watch him now and he's doing things every game that I feel like I haven't seen him do before. And he's putting the ball on the floor better. It's not getting poked away. He's attacking the rim more. He's making plays where he squares up and he goes one or two dribbles. And then he's shooting that like high bank shot off the glass. I feel like he's just every game he's adding stuff. And the more and more, I know I've said this a bunch of times, but the guy can pass. I mean, he just sees stuff and makes passes. And I feel like, look, his 3-point shooting is still objectively horrible. He's shooting 19%, I believe, on the year from three. So
that's pretty good, Mike.
That's pretty
horrible. Better than you and me.
That's better than you and me at this point, but it's objectively horrible. So, but when he shoots the 12 to 17 footer, I feel pretty confident when he raises up to shoot that shot is going in. And so I think it's just a matter of time before. And look, a matter of time may not mean 3 weeks from now. It may mean next year. It may mean the year after. At some point, he's going to become a competent 3-point shooter. Now, again, he's never going to be Kevin Durant from out there, but is he going to be able to off a swing shot type scenario? Is he going to be able to make those kinds of threes with pretty good regularity at some point in his career? I would bet that he can. And then he just continues defensively. He just swallows up everything. If you don't get your body into him, he's going to block your shot. Now he still has to get stronger because guys that bury their shoulder into his chest and kind of knock him out of the way, that's when he struggles a little bit. But if he doesn't let you get to his body, he blocks almost everything. And yep. He's so long. He has such good hands. Like I said, every game, I feel like he's showing me something that I didn't see before. And man, I just, the ceiling on what he could be is just, I mean, he's going to be so good for so long. And the fact that he's a two-way player for this team with these guys that they have. I mean, look, Garland keeps getting better and better and better. Every time you watch him, the guy has incredible vision, his ability to finish. And those two guys, I mean, Mitchell's still arguably the best player, but man, Garland is right there when you take into effect his playmaking and what he can do with the ball in his hands. He's as good as anybody out there. I was watching when we played the Pacers the other day, and you're watching Halliburton. And look, Halliburton's good, but I'm sorry. There's no way he's better than Garland. And I know he has whatever Garland's averaging. I forget how many points a game that Garland's averaging right now.
Halliburton's got more assists per game, I guess.
But I'm just saying, it's like, but don't forget Garland. I'm not telling you to not forget it, but Garland's sharing the ball with Mitchell, and there's so many other factors. I just think Garland is a better player than Tyrese Halliburton. And then don't get me wrong, Halliburton's great and he makes a lot of good passes, but you just watch how potentially explosive Garland is. There's no way Halliburton's ever going to be that. And I think that from a vision standpoint, at worst, they're equal. And I still would probably put Garland's ability as a passer. I think Halliburton is super unselfish and he's a great passer and he can do lots of things, but
six away.
I don't think Halliburton's going to be, when he gets to be, have a best team, I think he's going to be maybe the second or third best player on a championship team at best. I think Garland could be your second best player on a championship team when he gets to his apex. He's good.
Yep.
I'll stay with your same analysis. He's good.
He's good. He's good at basketball.
He's good at basketball. Agreed.
And he can, I'm starting to see like I think he was figuring it out and people were on him about not like playing his sophomore slump or whatever, but he didn't have to play with Donovan Mitchell, who, I mean, listen, Donovan Mitchell's really good at basketball. Okay. And that's another additional offensive piece that he had to figure out how to play with him. So I think people were getting on him too much and not like thinking about the adjustment that he was going through. And he's really, like you said, I think he could be, Mike, he could be the best player on a championship team. That's his ceiling, right? You think that's his ceiling? Can he be the best player in a championship team or no?
No, because he's too small. I mean, I think ultimately.
No, I'm saying Mobley.
Mobley can be the best player on a championship team. Yes.
Yeah, he definitely can at some point.
And I still think people are a little bit down on his offense. I think mostly because the shooting hasn't come around this year the way that people maybe thought it would. But I'm telling you, he keeps just showing flashes of things that as he gets stronger, as his handle gets better, as his shooting improves, he's doing things now that when he puts all these elements together are going to be unguardable. I mean, he has a super soft touch around the basket. He's such a good passer. Strength and a handle. Those are the two things that, you know, along with shooting a three, those three things are the three things that he's going to continue to work on. I think the handle and the strength are a given, and the three is something that, will he get there? I don't know. Like I said, I like his touch on the mid-range 12 to 17 footers that I see, and the form is good. So I got to think at some point he's going to put enough work in that three is going to come around. And yeah, best player on a championship team. I think there's no question he's going to get there at some point.
Yep. All right. So let's predict the Cavs. We're going to predict them through the All-Star break because there's only one game after we're going to record next week. Is that fair, Mike? Can we just do that?
Good. Yeah, it sounds
okay. Good. Tomorrow, Detroit. That's a win.
Yes, that is a win.
Friday, move to ESPN, shifted to 10 o'clock. The Cavs at the Pelicans. I'm going to put it in a win.
Yeah, that's got to be a win. That's a win.
Okay. Then the Cavs are home the next night against the Bulls.
That's a win.
That's a win too. Okay. The Bulls don't have the game the night before, but I'm okay with you saying that win. Then Monday, home against the Spurs. That better be a win.
Yeah. Yo, the Spurs won.
Yeah. And then the last game before the All-Star break, the Cavs at the Sixers. I'm going to put that in the loss column. I can't say that we're going to go 5-0. I think 4-1. I think that's attainable.
Let's win that one, baby.
Oh, come on now. When they lose that Friday night game this week, I'm going to say they're going to go 4-1 in that 5-game stretch. They're going to lose one of those games.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. That's fair.
I'll take a 4-1. If we go 4-1, I mean,
the absolute worst case scenario in this scenario should be 3-2. And I think if you don't go 4-1, you got to be disappointed with three home games against, frankly, terrible teams. And New Orleans has lost whatever, they beat the Lakers the other night, so they've lost 10 out of 11. Sixers obviously have been playing well. But see, I think the Cavs, to me, I feel like the Cavs can handle Philadelphia. I mean, I feel like they have some advantages because Philly's backcourt defense is so bad with Harden and Maxey. And I feel like Mitchell and Garland can kind of feast in there. And then we have things that we can throw at Embiid to at least make him work. So I'm okay. I think I wouldn't mind seeing Philly in the playoffs if I was the Cavs. So I'll stick with my 5-0. I was pessimistic this past week. I said they'd lose to Memphis, and obviously they took care of business in that game. So that was a good. Opportunity to start putting some distance between them and hopefully Brooklyn, so that you have a little cushion when Durant, if and when Durant comes back, and if Brooklyn decides what they're going to do, you give yourself a little space between, you know, you kind of secure that 4 spot, I guess, is my point.
Yeah. And I mean, when you look at the conference, I mean, they're 5 games out. I don't think they could be the 1 seed, but I mean, I guess they theoretically could become the 1 seed. There's what? They've got 26 games left, but they're going to have to go what to have a chance. Like, so they're at 34 wins. They're getting to 50, right? We're willing to say
they're going to get to 50.
They're going to go to 16. They're going to go 16-10. What do they have to get to, do you think, to win the? I mean, what's Boston or Milwaukee going to get to? They're not going to get to. Are they going to get to 60? The 50. Mm. They're at 54 games. They're at 54 games now. So that means they have 28 more.
I don't think either of those teams is getting to 60.
So 56, 55, is that what we have to get to?
If you want to win the conference, I think you probably got to get to 58, 57, 58. That's what I would say.
Okay, so that means we have to go 24 and what? 24 and 4? That's not happening.
Yeah,
so,
no, it's not happening.
So I think the three seed's probably the pie and the highest we can attain right now, right? Agree? Agree?
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Okay. Would you be happy?
I think the way this is playing out right now, where if Brooklyn, and who knows what they're going
to do. We want Brooklyn to not be if we're the 4 seed, we do not want Brooklyn to be the 5 seed. I don't want to play Durant in the first round of the playoffs. Sorry. I don't care who else is on his team. I don't want to play Durant in the first round of the playoffs. Nope.
All right. I guess that's fair, but I guess I would look at it and say, clearly, say what you want about Philly. Philly's been better than Brooklyn. And
4 points away.
All right, there you go. I think as long as the Cavs stay in the 4 slot, I'm okay. If they have first home court advantage in the first round, then I'm good. I'm good with that. I'd like to see them move up, but I'm okay with them being in the 4 slot. They have a nice end to their season, by the way.
Yeah. They have this is an easy stretch. Then they have a little bit of a difficult stretch, and then they have the last 2.5 weeks. I think they have one difficult game.
Yeah, I mean, you end, I mean, they end with Indiana, Orlando, Orlando, Charlotte, which at that point, I mean, all those teams are going to be happy to lose. And then before the three games before that are Houston, Atlanta, New York. So there's a lot, they got a lot of, they got a lot of Charlotte and Orlando still on the schedule. So those are all games that you should put in the win column. So I think they're going to end up with a pretty good record. I think they'll be able to hold on to a top four seed. And if they do that, that sets
two.
There you go. The moment is almost here. Are we just staying on to see if he does it?
I mean, sure. Oh, they called a timeout. No, we're not staying on.
We're not staying on. We're aborting so we can go.
I think we should board it. I mean, here's what we know, it's going to happen, Mike. It's going to happen tonight. He's 2 points away. There's still a whole quarter left. He's not going to not score 2 points. Now, okay, so how's he going to do it, Mike? Let's make a prediction right now, and then the listeners can hear if we're wrong.
Okay.
How's he going to do it? Is he going to do the sky hook? Is that what he's going to do? I mean, he was practicing your pregame.
You think he's going to try to do the sky hook?
Yeah. He was practicing a pregame. He actually made a sky hook from three pregame. But he was doing practicing the sky hook.
Okay.
Pregame today.
I'm saying he's not going to go with the sky hook.
Is he going to dunk it?
That's kind of ambitious for a 38-year-old guy to say he's going to get a dunk. What's crazy, I didn't say this before, but as you were talking about earlier when you said he has like 200 people there, how crazy is it that a guy who's 38 years old can just tell everybody, hey, man, I know I need 36 points tonight in an NBA game, but it's going to happen. And it's going to happen. It's just another.
And he's making you happy. He's making you happy.
That's what I'm saying. It's just another. It's absurd. It's absurd.
I mean, he flew his mom, like his whole family, his high school team. Like, they're all out there.
It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd that he's going to. All right. I say he's going to make a. I'm calling for a step back three to break it.
A step back three? No way.
Step back three. Come on. That's his signature shot now.
He's made all of his buckets at the brim tonight. No, he made the ones. He made a three and then two threes. SGA, by the way, is having a nice night. 25 points, 9 of 10 from the free throw line, 8 of 13 from the field. All right. Let's see. We'll see if it happens here in the last minute of the third quarter, Mike. And if not, then we abort it. How does that sound?
All right, that sounds good. So you have the sky.
I haven't read a sky hook. He's setting up right now. SGA shooting free throws. He's getting ready.
Kareem. What's Kareem thinking? Kareem's not happy the guy's breaking his record, right? I know Kareem's going to be gracious and whatever. He's not happy.
Yeah, okay. LeBron has the ball.
Oh, he's trying to post up. Here he goes.
Oh, no. Passed it.
Oh, there he goes. Step back three. Set up for it. Another pass.
Pass. Oh, man. Didn't even take a shot.
LeBron makes the right decision, baby. That's what he's known for. It all started with Danielle Marshall. He's still doing it.
Damon Jones.
Oh, here we go. One more possession. Get it to Russ.
Okay, Russ has turned this over so fast. Oh, here we go. Okay, LeBron's got it. Ron's got it. This is really compelling. Oh, no. Fade away. Got it. Fade away two. Fade away two.
That ties it, right?
No, that broke it.
That broke it. That was it.
That broke it. Yeah, that is it.
Kareem is excited.
All right, now is Kareem going to come on the floor and hug him?
Yeah, I think so. I think he has to.
Oh, he's on the floor right now. He's on the floor right. All right.
Oh, now they're escorting him off. Get off, Kareem.
No. He's they're putting him there. He came over to Darvin Ham. His kids are.
He's bringing everybody out. Is Jeff Van Gundy taking pictures of him?
He's with his kids. Is that Jeff Van Gundy? I see the guy you thought was Jeff Van Gundy.
You see Van Gundy? Is he waiting?
Well,
he's waiting on Missouri. His daughter.
There
she is.
His wife. Which, by the way, when did his wife go blonde? When did Savannah go blonde? I noticed that tonight.
There you go.
Well, you were close. You had the step back.
I had the step back. It kind of felt like it was going to be a step back. That's cool, man. Congratulations, LeBron. It's awesome.
All right, so now we're going to talk about this really quickly. Okay. How high can he get this now? He's going to hit 40, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's averaging 30 a game. So the fact that even if he drops down, I don't know. I mean, I think he could put it realistically if he wants to keep playing, and clearly it seems like he does. I mean, you're talking – so if he's averaging 30 a game and playing, what, 60 games a season? Now, he's probably not going to average 30, but let's say he drops down to between 20 and 25 over the next couple of years. You're still talking about he's going to put up like 1,200 points, 1,300 points in a season. So you're looking at next year, that takes him to 40,000. He's probably got four more years. I don't know. I think 44,000, 45,000 is not completely insane when you look at what he's been able to do. And just there's still, I mean, clearly there are signs that he's slowing down, but statistically there really isn't any signs.
So how high is he going to get, Mike? That's the question.
45,000.
You think he's going to hit 45?
Yes.
I like it.
Yes.
Oh, so Adam Silver's there. Kareem's there. They were just showing. Did you see any of the highlight package that they had put? They had put a like a video together. Someone on Twitter pointed out this probably means we're going to get a dope Nike commercial tonight, right?
Yeah, probably at some point, I would guess.
All right. So who's this worse for now? Is this worse for the Lakers or worse for the Thunder that we've got this now off our back, and now we've got still have a whole another quarter to go? We've got a whole another quarter to go. The Lakers are down 5. Like,
I think it's worse for the Lakers.
100%, because now LeBron does not think. I mean, I guess he's just thinking to win. Okay, Adam Silver's going to talk now, Mike. Here, I screwed up. I was going to put the audio on here. Anthony Davis, Patrick. Oh no, I don't want to go back to the beginning of the game. Oh, YouTube TV failing me right now.
It's all over. I think we just wrap it here, and you and I go watch it.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
All
congrats,
right,
LeBron. The end. Yeah,
kudos to LeBron. Awesome. This is an incredible accomplishment, and there's never been a career like LeBron's career. I'm glad that Kareem's there. It's really classy and not surprising. So kudos, LeBron. Kudos to Kareem. And, man, what a great moment for LeBron in the NBA.
Channing Frye, did you ever watch The Office, Mike? Did you ever watch The Office?
No.
Channing Frye put a gif of the one guy standing, the Thunder just sitting there like, he's just sitting at his desk with his arms crossed and a mad face on his.
That's funny. That's funny.
All right.
That's very cool with LeBron and Kareem. Very cool.
Yep. All righty.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.